Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
All right, this is the MGB review of GCW's event, Art of War 2020. All the way back from February 5th, 2020. From the, I'm not sure how you pronounce this one, Mason. I think we might have a few of these during this one. I really need Paul. Paul from, I was about to say his last name, but I know he's changed his Twitter handle now, so he doesn't include it. At Rain Counter, I really needed him for some of these pronunciations. I think it's the Shin Kaiba, first ring in Tokyo. And this is the new format. We're not going to be spending time reviewing the whole events right now. Screen time, just general time is a big factor. So this is going to be the first one where we pick three matches. We're going to review the main event. We're going to review one other match that we really wanted to see. And then we're going to pick one match with somebody who we didn't know before, so we get to learn some new wrestlers as we go along. I thought we'd start off with, as we never actually talked about GCW before, except in passing, I went back and found out a little bit about them. Obviously an independent professional wrestling promotion based in New Jersey, active since 1999. That really surprised me. I did not know they were anywhere near as old as that. It's currently owned by independent referee Brett Lauderdale, and the promotion was founded by wrestler Ricky Otazu in 1999 as Jersey Championship Wrestling. So possibly it changed its name somewhere along the line, which is why I didn't know about it. Now, I don't know about this one. I'm going to guess you possibly don't know. Do you know what Art of War is, Mason?
The gladiators?
No. It's actually a really famous piece of literature. It actually describes tactics in war. So I looked it up to specifically. I knew it was old, but I didn't know exactly now how old, so I went back to look. It dates from the 5th century BC. So it's 2,500 years old, this book, and people still talk about it. The work, which attributed to the ancient Chinese military strategist Sun Tzu, that's Master Sun, is composed of 13 chapters. Each one is devoted to an aspect of warfare and how it applies to military strategy and tactics. For almost 1,500 years, it was the lead text in the anthology that would be formalized as the Seven Military Classics by Emperor Shenzong of Song in 1080. So 1,500 years later, 1,000 years ago, it's still relevant at that point. The Art of War remains the most influential strategy text in East Asian warfare and has influenced both Eastern and Western military thinking, business tactics, legal strategy, lifestyles, and beyond. That's why it's still relevant. Although it was originally about how you would put an army together and how you would attack and things like that, some of those things are still relevant today in making your business succeed as well. So that was where the name Art of War came from, so I thought that was a reasonable place to start from. Now, this was actually kind of a short one anyway. In terms of if we were reviewing something, I think it was less than an hour and a half. It was like 1:27, something like that. Six matches. We will talk about the ones that won the card, but we might not just go into any major detail at all. So we skipped over the first one. Match one was Gentaro and Tomoya Hirata defeated Kikutora and Shigehiro Iri in 8 minutes 38. And match two was a possible one, KTB versus Toru Segura. And Toru Segura defeats KTB in 6 minutes and 47. And the reason that was a possible one is KTB features at Synergy Pro Wrestling, which we'll actually be reviewing next week as part of their third birthday. The one that we did pick for the... Actually, we could have picked almost any match for somebody who we didn't know, because we don't really know the Japanese wrestlers at all.
Yeah.
So we kind of picked it for the who was they facing, which was the important one. So the first one that we picked was match three, Sekimoto versus Chris Dickinson. And the thing I noticed about this one was the masks in the crowd. This was February. Now, it's actually early February, I think I said. I don't remember being that aware of COVID at that time. Like, I know we left school March 13th. Only about a week before that was it really on my radar, I think. So to see people, obviously in Asia, it started in that area to begin with. But it was interesting to see how many people were wearing masks at that point. Actually, it does say on the when I looked up the figures for Japan, the first COVID cases weren't until February 23rd, when they had 27 cases. And the maximum has been 2,000 cases on August the 3rd. So it's possible. Because I did say also, Asians have a habit of, if you have a cold or if you have a cough, they tend to wear masks anyway. Which now seems really sensible. I think if you saw a person wearing a mask pre-COVID, you would have thought it was a little out of place. Now, I'm hoping that's something that we keep doing.
It was like a doctor's office or a dentist, because they're always wearing masks.
You would see them, but I think if you saw a member of the public wearing that, or if you saw somebody in your class wearing that, or if I saw a student wearing that, it would probably stand out, kind of.
Yeah, you look weird.
I'm hoping now that that's something that actually catches on, that if you do have, like, a cough or something, that you actually do start wearing a mask going forward. I did hear the crowd straight away chanting Dirty Daddy, so they obviously knew who Chris Dickinson was. That could have been part of the American audience, I don't know. I'm sure there's some Americans who live out in Japan, particularly in Tokyo, who could have come to watch it. So the person we didn't know there, Mason, was Sekimoto, Japanese professional wrestler, currently signed to Big Japan Pro Wrestling in the Strong Division. He's also known for his appearances in Pro Wrestling 01 Max. He's a 3-time BJW World Strong Heavyweight Champion, while also being a former 1-time NWA Pan Pacific Premium Heavyweight Champion. That's a bit of a mouthful as a title. And 1-time WXW Unified World Wrestling Champion, and 2-time 01 World Heavyweight Champion. All right, Mason, what about this match?
Well, you may know one of these wrestlers, but I don't know either of them.
I thought you knew who Chris Dickinson was.
I've seen one of his matches.
Okay, we kept talking about it, and you were like, "I don't know who that is. I don't know." And I thought you actually knew who that was. Now,
yes, I've seen him before. We've reviewed his match at Beyond.
Oh, that was the one that was on the
when he was
the pier in Atlantic
Mance,
City,
where Nick Gage got injured.
Of course, I'd forgotten about that one.
Okay, so there was only one commentator, which I was a little confused by, because they had to fly him out, and, like...
I thought you were going to say there was only one comment. We're reviewing 3 matches. I was like, oh my gosh, you better have more than one comment. Yeah, you said that. I would have thought that
they would have recorded it later with 2 commentators. Like, they would have had it the live... They would have had the recordings in front of them, and they would have commentated on it.
They could have done it that way. They could also have had a live feed as well. And often they've been doing that for the NXT events. I don't think they've needed to for WWE. But they've been having, I think Beth Phoenix has been like on the phone, and
Tour
her comments
France.
Come in. And the Tour de France, yeah, they had,
the
guy
in America.
Yeah, the guy was in England, and then they had the guy in America. Bob Roll is the only one I can remember, and that's not even the more famous of the two people. I want to keep saying Phil Liggett, but I don't think it is Phil Liggett.
I don't really know many commentators.
Actually, it is. It's Phil Liggett. I was thinking of his old commentator partner, Paul Sherman, but no, it was Phil Liggett. But yeah, interesting to see how they chose to do that. And I don't think there was any travel restrictions at this point, though.
Yeah.
Because it's still too early. This is February 5th. So this is over a month before that sort of thing. People were even talking about that type of thing.
I remember the first thing that, like, really scared me about the coronavirus was, like, what I heard about this cruise coming into America from Japan.
Yep.
And the whole ship had COVID.
Yep.
And I'm like, if they actually all leave, then yep, it's going to be transported here, and it's going to spread fast.
Yeah. Those cruise ships, unfortunately, obviously, you're in a very enclosed area. There is nowhere else to go. So, yeah, they can, unfortunately, be very bad for things like that. All right, what about the match, though?
Chris traps Daisuke's leg, then drop kicks it, and a chop to Daisuke, and it does nothing, and Daisuke gets each leg in each side of Chris's neck, and then does like a little twirl, and Chris almost wins with a duet valley drive.
Death valley driver. You can tell Mason did his notes in pen today.
I forgot to write the H.
A deep valley driver.
Yeah. All these wrestlers got flown out from all that way for about a 10-minute match at most,
uh-huh,
which is a little confusing to me. But
now, I asked you to write that down, and I said, oh, yeah. I was like, I've not even thought about that. Later in the commentary, and I probably had it somewhere else later in my notes, they did say it was the end of a tour. So it wasn't, and I thought that probably makes sense. You're not going to fly that distance for one match. I don't know how long the tour was, but they traveled several cities while they were doing it.
I wonder if they had masks.
I don't know. From an American perspective, that would kind of still be kind of strange,
like,
at that time.
You wouldn't
time.
Know anything about it, because we weren't really that intelligent on it at that point.
It didn't affect us, so we were. I don't know.
Like, you wouldn't think of bringing masks with you in your travel bag, I don't think.
It would be more, like I said, it would be more common in Japan to wear a mask anyway. So, yeah. With that situation, it's very possible they have masks that were available. I think prior to this, if I suddenly needed a mask from somewhere, I would actually have to think. I'd probably have to go to a store and buy one. I'd probably have to go to a pharmacy or something. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm sure the people who were organizing the tour would help them with things like that. But yeah, they wouldn't have a mask like you have right now.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been just the ones like you see at the medical facilities, the very cheaper ones, where you can quickly put them on and you throw them away straight away. So well, they wouldn't they have designer ones or anything.
They might have had like a bandana or something like that, because those are easy to get.
They could have had
and
that as well.
At that point, they didn't know that that does more harm.
Yeah, it splits the particles up. I still see some people wearing that. I'm sure not everyone's heard that story, yeah. But yeah. It's actually better to wear nothing than to wear that, because of the size of the particles.
I've seen a couple disc golfers wear gaiters.
I have too, yeah.
Which, if you're disc golfing, it doesn't matter, because you're outdoors.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're indoors, then you definitely need to wear a mask.
All right, what else in this match? I don't know if we've had the finish yet.
Wins with a delayed bridging German suplex. And it must be a Japanese tradition to shake hands and bow, because they did that in their earlier match, too.
It's considered a very respectful society. And, yeah, I've seen sumo wrestling. I don't watch New Japan particularly. I've seen a little bit. But I remember, I've watched probably more sumo wrestling. And it's, yeah, there's a lot of tradition there. There's a lot of respect for your opponent. And, yes, bowing is certainly more of a custom in Japan, for sure.
And if you're now, a heel?
I think after the that's a good question, actually. I don't know the answer to that, actually.
If you're like a massive heel,
yeah, that kind of undermine. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
It's tough to be a wrestler, because you have social media, too, and you can post personal stuff. Like, if you have a kid, and you're a massive heel, then it looks like, and that makes you look a little weaker.
I don't know how much the kayfabe situation goes on. Like, do they realize, like, once the match is over, they realize it's a character, and therefore, as the performance is over, you can therefore show respect for your fellow wrestler. I don't know. Like, obviously, if you watched a play or something, and you had a good guy and a bad guy, once the play is finished, everyone comes onto the stage and everyone takes a bow. So at that point, everyone realizes, okay, the show is over now. I don't know the answer to that one. Hopefully, someone will actually let us know what they thought of this. Now, I knew this was GCW. I knew GCW is kind of violent, which is why you picked it, of course. This was your pick this week. And I knew it was Chris Dickinson, who's really hard-hitting. I wasn't expecting this match to be as hard-hitting as this. I was thinking the Japan style was not going to... I thought they were going to go more to the Japan style than the GCW style, or what I perceive Japan style to be anyway. This guy was huge. 5'9", 253. That suplex that he did at the end that you talked about, he lifted Chris Dickinson up like he was nothing.
Yeah.
Which it's I have seen quite a few Chris Dickinson matches. I don't think I've seen anyone manhandle him quite like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the other thing that's going on in Japan, which surprised me as well, I looked up on Cage Match. He's had 42 matches since that date. That's kind of a lot. I was like, whoa, they're obviously wrestling on a regular basis, which really surprised me. The thing that I did see right in the end was I actually saw this Nish guy posted this one. Chris Dickinson is facing John Moxley at Josh Bartlett's Bloodsports in October. That's the collective event that's out in Indianapolis that they normally do around WrestleMania weekend. There's like 12 pay-per-views in 3 days. So I got to see some of that last year. But yeah, Chris Dickinson versus John Moxley.
Yeah, that's really cool for him, because he gets to face the number one in the world after he was announced number one in the world.
I would really like to see that one, I have to say.
Yeah.
I looked at the price for the whole deal, for all 12. It's like $140. I'm not sure I want to pay that much. I'm not sure how much each one is individually.
Yeah.
Probably about $15, I guess, something like that. I don't know. There's a few good ones, but I'll have to see.
That gives me a big question, talking about Jon Moxley. You know how AEW and WWE are like rivals, right?
Yeah.
He's married to a WWE person, right?
This is why I keep telling you, you need to watch at least the highlights so you know what's going on. She left WWE. She's not with WWE anymore. You're talking about Renee Young.
Yeah.
She's not with them anymore.
Oh.
You need to at least watch something.
Where does she
go? I think she's with Fox or something now. I don't know exactly. I haven't been watching much, but that's the last couple of weeks for me, but there's no reason why can't.
Okay, I'll start doing it on Clash of Champions. I'll make it a goal.
You at least need to watch. I didn't even watch the 5-minute highlights this week. I didn't even watch the top 10.
Yeah,
but I listen to podcasts, though, so I at least hear from other people what's actually happened.
I did it 1 week, and then the next week.
Too much?
No, it's not too much. It's just I forget.
I think it's interesting how you...
I looked on Monday, and the Friday night SmackDown wasn't out yet.
I think it's interesting how much you've evolved in 3 years. This is the 3-year anniversary of you first going to indie events.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, way before that time, you were obviously just WWE.
Yeah.
I think you've gone past that point. I'd reached that point much quicker than you had, but I think that you're way less interested in... Like, you're still excited for the pay-per-view tonight, and that's absolutely fine. But you would you're not following it anywhere near as closely as what you would have done before.
It's like fantasy football. If you have something outside of that, then you're really interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm not doing fantasy this season. I just watch the highlights for the Ravens game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm not into it that much.
Because
I don't watch the full games
anymore. I wasn't even watching that. But I was watching it more for you because I was hoping... Because we made some great picks with Lamar Jackson last year.
Yeah.
And he was fun to watch.
I kind of need to watch him now if we ever do it later, but...
Mm-hmm. All right, match four, we were going to pass over. It was Drew Parker, Ryuji Ito, Toshiyuki Sakuda defeated Jimmy Lloyd, Matthew Justice, and Orrin Vyte. Except, as we got to this one, you were like, oh, there's light tubes. I want to watch this one. I was like, well, it's only 8 minutes. So I was like, you can if you want to. And I said, you realize there's going to be light tubes later as well, right? And you're like, I want to watch it. I was like, all right, if you want to watch it.
Yeah.
Do you have anything to comment on this match then? Or were you just actually watching this one?
I remember one thing. So Matthew Justice, I believe he got thrown into the barbed wire.
Mm-hmm.
That board is so thin.
Thin, yeah.
But
paper thin.
Yeah, but the barbed wire still make it hurt.
Yeah. Yeah, they make it as safe as possible, but yeah, there's still an inherent danger when you're using barbed wire.
Yeah.
All right, I thought you'd taken more than this. So you were watching this one just for fun more than anything.
Yeah, and I didn't know anybody, and it was like six people, so it was kind of hard to get those names down.
Quickly. Yeah, it was. I knew Matthew Justice from AEW, and I've actually watched a bit of an AEW event this week as well. AIW. Oh, jeez, I got to stop saying that one. So, and I was actually researching I was like, that's fine, go ahead, you can watch this, and I can research that other person at the same time. So that actually worked out fine.
Well, I kind of realized now that the Japanese is like deathmatch, because you don't really see that all over the place in the U.S. There are some companies that do that, but Japanese, there's like a lot of deathmatch.
It depends which organization, again. There's like that one organization where I talk... Yeah, Big
and
Japan Pro does.
I guess
I don't think all of them do that.
New Japan are violent.
They are, but they're not like that level.
Uh-oh.
I think if you're talking about the match where they get bit by a scorpion and things like that, then
when they have to fight an alligator,
that's a little different. But yeah, no, I don't think it's any that different. I don't think that if you think that that's what most Japanese wrestling is like, I think you've got the wrong image.
Uh-huh.
I just pointed that one out because I thought you'd find that one interesting. And, that's one of the that made a Christmas cracker last year because it was like really cool. You were like reaction to it, and it was kind of cool. When I was researching it, I was like, "Whoa, that's insane!" All right, match five. The one that you did pick as the one that you wanted to see was Schlack because we've seen him before, versus Abdullah Kobayashi. Now, I said the other guy was big. Kobayashi, 5'9", 364. He got his name from Abdullah the Butcher, who was his trainer. I also found out later, he was also trained by Kendo Nagasaki, who was a British wrestler I used to watch when I was your age.
Yeah.
He began his career in 1995 as one of the main wrestlers in Big Japan Pro Wrestling in the deathmatch division. He is well known for his very brutal deathmatches. See, this is why they picked him for this one, because it's hard hitting and that matches up with GCW. With the likes of Ryuji Ito, I think that was the person in the previous match, actually, and several other BJPW wrestlers. On June 26, 2010, Kobayashi made his American debut in CZW's Tournament of Death 9, defeating Nick Gage in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what you got for this one, then?
So, there are light tubes taped all over the ropes, and Abdullah breaks the tubes with his mouth, and so does Slack, and he breaks it, and he keeps it in his mouth. So, after we watched all of it, then I went upstairs and I looked up the chemicals inside light tubes. And I don't have it with me, but I remember some of them. Like, you can have kidney problems. You can have, like, your thinking process isn't straight. You lose intelligence. And so, it's really not good for you at all.
You needed to look that up?
Well, I didn't know what, like, the things could happen. But shortness of breath, you lose your breath, that's not good for when you're wrestling.
No.
And, I mean, I guess the loss of intelligence isn't good either.
No, none of those things would be good. We've said before that, I know it said they can potentially kill you. I think you'd have to inhale a lot of it. But I think they hold their breath when they're actually getting hit, and then they kind of move to the other side of the ring a little bit to try and reduce that. But yeah, no, there's a lot of things in there that are not good at all. But yeah, that was kind of crazy at the start. He takes a bite out of a light tube, and then the other guys were like, if you're going to do that, I'm going to do that. Yeah.
That's glass, too. It can... take a cut in your mouth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm sure that... I wonder what the average lifetime of a deathmatch wrestler is.
Because
of all those
I don't
cuts
know.
And stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I know the average American lives 82. right?
Less than that. It's going to be high 70s, but yeah, it's less than, it's not 80s. It's actually, this is the first generation where it's actually less than the predecessor, than the generation before. Like, obviously, if you go back a long time ago, it used to be like 30s, and then it gradually increased, depending on when people used to work, like, every single day of the year, and there was no good conditions and things like that. So, no, this is actually the first generation where it's lower. But, yeah, it's around 78, I think it is. But I don't know. Like, I'm going to say, I've only become familiar with death wrestling, really, deathmatch wrestling, since I started watching the indies. Like, you don't see that on WWE.
Yeah, so I don't know.
So I don't know any... Like, if you ask me for classic deathmatch wrestlers, I'm thinking of people like Matt Tremont, but he still wrestles now.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, broken bone shirt don't help at all.
Yeah, I'm sure they've got a lot of scars and a lot of broken bones. And I don't know. I don't know.
If they suffer from depression from all that pain meds they have.
You don't have to do this.
Yeah,
they could just suddenly go, I'm stopping. I'm just going to do regular wrestling.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know the answer to that one. I'm sure that'll be very, that's such a niche thing. I don't even know if they have statistics for things like that.
You have to take pain meds every day too?
I don't know.
It's like, when you look at
I'm sure there's a lot of abuse from things like that. Like, I don't know if you realize Kurt Angle got onto, he got hooked on things like that for
a long time.
Yeah, yeah. He was taking way too many. Yeah.
Well, did that have anything to do with his neck? Or is that healed at that time?
I think that was after that. It certainly wasn't his Olympic thing. It was more later than that.
Oh, I think
it was, I'm not sure exactly the time frame, but I think it was more like 2010. I think it was around that time.
Uh-huh. So Schlack, he breaks a light tube over his head for show, and each are thrown into the ropes, and they smash about 5 light tubes on their back when they get thrown into the ropes.
Yeah.
And there was a box of tubes on the side, and Abdullah, he takes a light tube, he puts it on Schlack's head, and then he headbutts the light tube, and there were forks and sharp stuff stabbed into each of their heads, and like there was noodles, there was forks, and Abdullah's it went into his skull so bad that he could walk around, and he was trying to shake his head so it would get off of him, but he wouldn't do it, and so Schlack had to pull it out of him to get it off.
Because I mentioned the spaghetti before, because I'd seen that at Beyond Wrestling. I don't think you'd seen that before, so I kind of knew where this was coming from, but it does look really effective.
Yeah.
When it's like sticking out of your head, and they're bashing it into the head. It looks really cool.
Yeah, it
How much it hurts, I have no idea, but it looks really cool.
They actually proved me wrong. What I thought and what I would do, if I would ever do that, put glue on the end of it, so it doesn't actually go into your skull.
Uh-huh.
So, and it can stick on your head still. I wonder if that's what some people would do, but obviously not these guys, because you could see their wounds.
I don't think it'd set quick enough. And, like, think how long a piece of spaghetti is. Like, the balance, it would just fall straight out. It's kind of got to be wedged. Yeah, it was...
I don't know. That probably wouldn't work, actually. There was an elbow drop, then a throw at Schlack. All of the tubes broke. And 2 dives off the top rope to Schlack, and Abdullah wins with that. And after the match, Schlack says, "I love you too," then kisses Abdullah.
That was kind of funny. And they brought the mic in, and they both had to speak. And yeah, the elbow drop from the top rope from a guy, 364 pounds, not just once, like it was at least 3 times. I was like, oh my gosh, it was crazy. I thought this was a fantastic match. I think we picked good ones. The Chris Dickinson match, I really enjoyed that match when we watched it. And then this one, even as well, I was like, whoa, this is like really cool. I know you could see that you enjoyed it with the light tubes and everything.
He reminds me of Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe's a big guy, and he's athletic.
Yeah, that's true.
But he's way bigger than Samoa Joe, too.
Now, the thing I found about this one was, having said the other guy had so many matches, Schlack had actually had more matches than I would have thought as well. He had 20 matches after this.
Wow.
So I was kind of surprised. I was thinking Schlack would have had like 3, 4, 5, possibly something like that. So I guess people are starting to get back into wrestling a little bit more. Now, at the end, I noticed that there's actually sometimes people review on Cage Match what they thought of the matches. And I saw this in the middle of this match, and I was like, oh, we picked the right matches. One person said, explosive bursts of violence as GCW ends their Japan tour. That was the other clue that I got from this one. Abdullah Schlack was bloody as hell. The main event crushed the light tubes hard as well. But Dickinson facing his Japanese inspiration, Sekimoto, was the most awesome thing on the show. Good fun with nothing outstaying its welcome. Yeah, absolutely perfect review there. Another enjoyable show that was made for a fun evening watching it. Not much of note, though, except for the hell of a fight that was Sekimoto versus Dickinson and the insanity of Kobayashi versus Schlag. That was the only two reviews. I'm not cherry-picking these. That was the only two reviews. So I was like, we absolutely picked the right matches for this one. And actually, the main event, which you think would be the bigger one, I didn't think there was any way it was going to be able to cope with what we'd actually seen. And I actually think it was probably slightly anticlimactic. Match 6 was Alex Colon, Danny Havoc, Matt Tremont versus Isami Kodaka, Kenji Fukimoto, and Takashi Sasaki. Now, I got to mention, Alex Colon was actually featured on the No Holds Barred Network recently for one of the interviews, and I knew he was a deathmatch wrestler at that point. So I often ask questions from your account, as you know. So one of the things, you asked somebody else this one. So I asked him, you obviously have a high threshold for pain. Are there any mundane things that hurt you, like stubbing your toe? And he's like, no, absolutely. If you stub your toe, that absolutely hurts. And he also said, you think I have a high tolerance for pain? He's like, no. He's like, that stuff really hurt. So that was the other thing. I guess that's one of the images I have in my head. If you do death matches, you can obviously cope with pain better. No, it still hurts them.
Oh.
It still hurts them a lot. And it can often take days to recover from those types of matches. And that's something that I guess it's convenient to put to your side of your mind. Like, oh, look, they're having a wrestling match, but they're only pretending, though, so nobody's getting hurt. And this is, no, not for those matches at all. But it was interesting
really?
To ask
I
him that question.
I thought they would have had a higher pain.
I would have thought so, too.
I thought all of those years of taking those kind of bumps and stuff would have made you tougher.
Well, not in Alex's case, anyway.
Yeah.
Of course, he could have been playing kayfabe at this point. He could have been trying to sell it like, no, no, it hurts way more than you think it hurts. If you think it hurts on TV, it hurts even more. I don't know. But I actually believe him on that one. But yeah, they do put their body on their line. Well, just think the regular wrestlers, though. Even some of the moves they do, it's like, oh, that would really hurt. And the stuff you add on top of that, man, yeah, it's got to hurt.
I can't remember the last time I've seen somebody get really, really injured from a death match, actually. Like, they're out?
Don't know. We don't watch that many.
Well,
so.
Yeah, true. And we don't see them over and over again. So if they actually do get injured for good, then and they don't say it or show it or anything like that,
mm-hmm.
then we might not know because we won't follow up on the next week or something like that.
Yep.
But we do for different wrestling like that.
Now, I didn't talk about any of these people. I know we've talked about Matt Tremont before.
Yeah.
And Danny Havoc, I don't know quite as well. And I left the other Japanese wrestlers because I thought there was enough for this one already as we have. So go ahead. Tell us about the last match, though.
Fukimoto also ate a light tube and a suicide light tube dive by Fukimoto. Danny's hand got stuck to the barbed wire. And...
Ugh.
Sasaki missed when he tried to throw the light tubes, but he still sold it, which reminds me of a Jinder Mahal, Jeff Hardy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fukimoto stabs Matt with a huge scissors, and security holds the ladder when they superplex off of it.
That was weird. Yeah, like the people on the outside of the ring, like they would constantly have to protect the people on the front row and kind of move things out of the way. But yeah, that was weird that they held the stepladder there. That was strange.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Jeff Hardy when he takes those huge dives.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised he's still wrestling.
Because
I don't know how many times the person's gotten out of the way and he's just jumped straight onto the table.
Mm-hmm.
I bet it makes it less painful when there's a table there,
mm-hmm.
which sounds crazy, but it actually is. Because, like, that mat, if you fall from that height, then you're probably going to have at least a couple
Your speed's
bones.
Building up.
Yeah.
The higher you fall, the speed is building up.
Yes.
Well, you probably don't know this then either. He just... You said Jeff or Matt?
Jeff.
I thought you said... I just want to make sure. He just signed a new contract with WWE, so he will be staying.
Oh, good.
And he's currently the Intercontinental Champion as well, so you probably didn't know that. So that
I
might
did.
Be, oh, you knew that one?
I
oh,
did.
Okay.
I
All
did
right.
know that.
I'm going to say that might be a surprise
because
as you're
I
watching Clash
on,
of Champions tonight.
I saw that on... He was still the he was the champion on whatever the last pay-per-view was.
Oh,
Payback.
Okay. All right.
Payback,
All right. Fair
right?
enough.
I don't remember. Probably Payback. Yeah, it was Payback.
All right. Anything else for this match?
The noodles were hammered into the head onto Sasaka. Sasaka jumps off the ladders and knees onto Alex with the tubes on Alex. And they won.
And most of those things that you said in there were things that happened in the previous match. So, yeah. Like, you added the noodles into your head. Yeah, we already did that. Ate a light tube. Already did that. Match 5, as good as it was, probably didn't do match 6 any favors. Yeah. If I'd have been in the back and I knew what match 5 had just done, I'd be like, what the heck? How are we going to try and beat that? So, it was a fun match, but it was nowhere near as good as the other two matches. We definitely picked some good ones to watch. And even that match 4 was fine. We only have two matches we watch. At some point, we might go back and watch match 1 and match 3. Now, one other thing. When you pick GCW, because I said to you, what do you want? You're like, GCW. And then we went straight to the IWTV site just to see what was actually there. And you were like, oh, Nick Gage is an interview. I was like, yeah, you're not watching. You're definitely not watching that. I did listen to the Nick Gage interview because I was actually looking because it throws questions there. And I was like, oh, after the first one, the first question was, which one do you prefer, Sheets or Wawa? And I was like, I can make a quiz out of this. I only got one question, Mason, so that was it. After that, it wasn't really that type of thing. I could have done, like, favorite food and stuff, but it was interesting, but it wasn't...
Sheets.
He did. He picked Sheets. People who've got the time, it was 2 hours. It's kind of a long interview. And there were some people whose names I actually recognized who were reading the questions out. Val Pancakes, I recognized from Twitter. I can't remember what her question was specifically. But yeah, there was a few people. It was kind of cool, though. I don't know. I would like to have seen that. We could have thrown in our own questions, perhaps. Yeah. But yeah, loads of people threw them in. A lot of them were like short answers. Like, I don't know, what's your favorite food? And say what it was. Next question. So there was a lot of people got a lot of impact, which was really cool. And yeah, the only rule I think I'm going to have to enforce is you got to pick a different organization while we're doing this. I think it works pretty well.
Yeah.
Although you already said you want H2O. It looks like you just want to pick death matches.
No, I want the ones that look cool.
Mm-hmm. I get to pick technically next week. Yeah. I wasn't sure we were going to be able to do Synergy because I was like, I know their shows kind of go long. I was like, I don't want that much. Excuse me. I don't want that much screen time. And then actually we had dinner. We went out for a walk. And they actually, when we came back, it was 5 minutes in, and they hadn't actually started because they were talking about their toy drive, first of all. So I was like, all right, we'll do that. We watched some of it last night, some of it this morning. So I'm picking Synergy Pro Wrestling, third birthday. That'll be what we'll do next week. I actually took a quick look at the time a second ago. We have easily 30 minutes right here. So
yeah.
I think even with, if we'd done the whole thing, we would have been way too long. I think this new format's going to work pretty well, actually.
Yeah, I got another question. So there was this prop on the side of the ring that we didn't know exactly what it was. It looked like it looked like knives, but it was had like a curved,
you could see the handles.
Curved handles, but it was in like a block of wood.
Did they get those out in the end?
Yes, they got hit in the head with it.
Abdullah. Oh, but they didn't actually take it out then, so we don't know if it was a block of knives or.
No.
I thought it was like wooden coat hangers to begin with, like like it looked like you could hang things from it if it was stood up against a wall or if it was attached to a wall. But yeah, I totally forgot about that because I remember there was a few things I was like, oh, write that down and then we'll talk about it. Yeah, I totally forgotten about that side. All right, anything else for this one?
Nope.
All right, I think we're done then.
It's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Music was Zigzag by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. https://creativecommons.org/licenses/by/3.0/